Next case is 00961, Richard C. Holscher versus Donna Holscher.
That's what it was, I don't know. Remember the writing?
Ms. Mallory?
May I please report, I'm Kathy Mallory, I'm the Assistant Prosecutor for Fairfield County, and I'm here today on behalf of Fairfield County Child Support Enforcement Agency. I would like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal in this case. This case originated as domestic relations case in the common pleas court of Fairfield County. The parties, Richard and Donna Holscher, had entered into a separation agreement which was subsequently adopted as a plea of dissolution in April of 1975. Under the terms of the agreement, Mr. Holscher was provided child support in the amount of $35 per week for the minor child. The minor child was born in November of that year, approximately 7 months after the dissolution of the decree. In 1989, the Fairfield County Child Support Enforcement Agency initiated a contempt of court action to enforce the child support obligation of Mr. Holscher. That action was resolved by an agreed entry, which again stated that Mr. Holscher would pay $35 per week for support of the minor child. In addition to that payment, it's a plan whereby Mr. Holscher would pay an additional $10 per week on arrearages until the child reached the age of 16. At that time, he would continue to pay $35 per week as current child support and then pay an additional $25 per week on the arrearages. The agreed entry of 1989 then stated that when the child reached the age of 18, he would pay $75 per week. In 1998, the Fairfield County Child Support Enforcement Agency initiated an action to collect arrearages. Those arrearages accrued from the time the child reached the age of 18 in November of 1993 until her graduation from high school in June of 1994. The trial court found that Mr. Holscher's obligation to make child support payments indeed continued until the child graduated from high school, and that any amount above the $35 per week in current support that he was ordered to pay would be applied to existing arrearages. The court determined that the arrearages that accrued from the date of the child's 18th birthday until graduation from high school was the amount of $986.90.
I didn't get the distinction you were making in your brief. Seems to me under the old statute, the amended statute, it said that the supporting parent was required to pay so long as the child is in an accredited high school. Under both statutes, didn't it?
Okay,
and that was the same case we had in Laser.
If you're referring to 31.103, you're correct in that prior to the amendments, it stated that there was a parental duty to support the child as long as the child was still continuing to attend high school.
And what did the amendment say?
Even if it was beyond the child's 18th birthday. The amendment added the language to clarify that duty to provide support for the child after the age of 18 included paying the child support payment.
Because a majority of this court, 4-3 decision, said that you didn't have to.
Under the specific facts in the Lazmore case, correct. In that case, there was a dissolution agreement in which the obligor had agreed to pay support until the child reached the age of majority. Historically, courts have looked at cases in this to determine if the child support order set forth or enumerated the duration of the child support order. For example, in the Lazmore case, when there was an agreement that was adopted by the court as a court order, which provided for child support until the age of majority, that is a specifically enumerated duration for the child support order. The day that order was issued, you could say that the child support order would terminate when the child reached the age of majority, which was 18 in the Lazmore case. However, in the case before the court today, what both of the agreed entry, for the agreed entry and the separation agreement stated was that he was paying child support for the minor child. Traditionally, courts have said that that does not specifically enumerate the duration of the child support obligation, that the duration is not fixed until the child reaches the age of majority, which for the Holscher case was 18. At that point, we look at the existing statute. When the Holscher case or Holscher dissolution decree was issued, the statute did not have the amended language. However, the amendment was done approximately 16 months prior to the child turning 18. So when that amendment came into effect, saying that the duty to pay or to support a child beyond high school or beyond majority continues during high school, Mr. Holscher was still under a duty to support his child. So when the child reached 18, there was a duty to support the child, and the statute has been amended to specifically say that that duty included the duty to make child support payments pursuant to a child support order.
Do you have any knowledge or perception that this statute isn't being followed throughout the state? I mean, it seems to me that we just accepted the fact that a child reaches the age of 18, still isn't an accredited high school, that the supporting parent is required to pay. That's what the statute says, and that's what it seems to me is happening all over the state. Why would you push this? Do you think maybe the court thought, boy, he's paid $28,000 or whatever it is for a child that isn't his own, and they want $900 more?
Well, first of all, I believe that most of the child support agencies or the child support cases were being handled under the assumption that the language in 3103 has always required that you pay until the child is out of high school, even if it's beyond the age of emancipation. However, the decision in this court in Lazar kind of clouded that issue, and it's still coming back upon child support enforcement agencies and others who are working on child support orders. The decision of this court in the Lazar case was very specific on its facts. But the problem in the case before the court today is that the appellate court, the Fifth District Appellate Court, based its decision in this case on the Lazar case, and we would submit that that was incorrect, that even if there had not been an amendment to 3103.03, that Lazar would not apply in this case because of the difference in the language of the support orders in the Lazar case versus this case before the court. However, I would submit that it's not necessary to distinguish the cases at this point because of the amendment 2303 in 1992.
Would it clarify matters if we found that light of the amendment has been no longer out?
That would certainly make life easier in this particular case, and I would guess in other cases across the state.
It doesn't matter whether you use minor or age majority, the kid was still in high school.
And I believe that is the correct, or the correct interpretation of the current language in 3103. And that is part of what the Fairfield County Child Support Coordinating is seeking at this point. We would also submit that the Fifth Appellate District was incorrect in its decision in that it ignored its previous case law in the Totten versus Totten case, in which there was a support order issued prior to the amendment of the 1992 amendment of 3101.03. And in that case, the Fifth Appellate District followed the reasoning of the Monticelli case in the First Appellate District. Monticelli has been cited numerous times in cases similar to or identical to the one before the court at this point to say that in a situation where there was a support order issued prior to the 1992 amendment to the statute, but that there were children who had not reached the age of majority until after the amendment, that the amendments directed that the child support obligation, including the obligation to make child support payments would continue until the child had graduated from high school.
Counselor, do you have your brief in front of you?
I forget my brief.
Would you please? First thing I want to mention to you is the issue of proofreading. It's not really important, but look at your proposition of law number one.
Pardon me?
Look at your proposition of law on small I, number the first page of your brief.
I was
1303, and you mean?
3103.
Okay, fine. Now, if you'll go to page 5.
Other guy did it too.
Last full paragraph. Tell me what that third sentence means. The court terminated Mr. Lazarus' obligation to make child support payments on the child's 18th birthday, again recognizing that Mr. Lazarus was still obligated to pay the support till graduation. Aren't those contradictory?
No, Your Honor. If you'll notice, it says that the Laz or he terminated his obligation to make child support payments. What the Lazor case says is that Mr. Lazor had an obligation to support the child, but that that obligation did not necessarily include making child support payments.
Well, so that's the distinction you're making throughout your brief, that Lazor says support, but that doesn't necessarily mean money.
Correct, and I would submit that...
We never use it in that context, have we?
Pardon me?
I mean, we talk about... You owe support for the child. We're talking about money, aren't we?
In the Lazor case, this court referred to the child support agreement as an indemnity contract. And again, the Lazor case was very specific on its facts, and I would submit that those facts are different from the facts in the case before the court today. But again, the problem for this case is that the Fifth Appellate District Court based its ruling on the Lazor case despite the fact that it is factually distinguishable in that it orders support for a minor child, and the statute was amended after the Lazor case, but prior to the age majority for the child in the Holscher case.
Sir, you haven't had to respond to a retroactivity argument because I didn't see it expressly stated in the appellee's brief. There is no retroactivity problem, I assume you would argue here.
I am arguing that to apply the statute as we are requesting does not raise the issue of retroactivity, in that the legislature was not imposing a new duty of support on the obligor. The legislature was clarifying, I believe, what it meant by support in the previous section, and that it was setting forth another way to carry out that duty of child, supporting a child by making a child support payment.
But if I only have a duty, or if a husband only has a duty to provide support, it could be father purchases clothes, even pays tuition for a private school, for example, but there's no child support payment required. Isn't there a new duty now here by saying that the statute now requires the father to actually make a child support payment?
I would agree with that. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Mowry. Mr. Stoughton.
And while it is unfortunate that his desire to provide his wife a certain amount of moral cloaking has come back to cost him financially, that's a matter of law, and it would be against public policy to support to have done otherwise. 1989, the decision was made, he was fine with what the law was. But both parties were present, both parties reaffirmed their agreement that child support stopped at the age of majority of this child. Never one knew what her birthday was, never one knew when she graduated from high school.
But can parties by contract change what the law requires as support obligations?
I don't believe so, and I don't think they have in this case. He had a duty of support, and at the time that they entered into this agreement, that duty of support was something that would pass age 18 if she was still in high school. But there was no duty of support.
What sort of support did he then give that one child support?
Well, there was an issue. There were some issues about whether or not track litigation and whether or not he would make an argument because he was looking at an expenditure of some several thousands of dollars. And his alternative at the time was to argue that the child wasn't his and make a moral argument in the face of the law and try and change the law, which ultimately has been done because of DNA. And now you can raise the issue of a minor child and say, this is not my child. DNA establishes that I'm entitled to credit for my child support because I shouldn't make child support anymore. He could have made that argument in 1989. He may not have been successful. He could have certainly made the argument and then shift.
That's a different issue. So it's like whether the kid's his or not. He's not taking any legal action at this point to change that, or the law is not going to change it so far. He's right now executing
the section.
You're talking about 1989?
No, at the time that this action was filed.
Yeah. In 1988.
Yeah. No, this action was filed in. The current one was filed recently, wasn't it?
No, it commenced in 1998. That's
right, 1998. At that time, it was considered the box. The old statute under what we originally said that duty of support should be in high school. New statute says that duty needs to child support. What do you intend to give as support once you stop paying child support from the
My argument, and I say this, and I say it because it's been consistent throughout my act. I was the attorney at the time. The fact is, he gave up an opportunity to litigate that issue, number one. Number two, he agreed to a payment schedule, which included child support, I think, towards Rurich. And when his child support obligation ended, the payment of $75 per month towards the Rurich until it was paid in full, which meant that even though it was a accumulated Rurich in the past.
So basically, he didn't intend to give any support after.
There was never any intent to give any support on his part. There was never any expectation of current obligation support on the part of child support, of course, when he seeks support of the mother. And when you read the language of the agreed entry, that's exactly what it says. And that point I made throughout is, even though CSE has argued that this is a lateral laser case, they're arguing that the statute says various kinds of things. My position, my suggestion to this court is it begs the question because it never gets there. This is a contract interpretation case. It is a question of what did the parties contractually agree and did the law modify that agreement, mandatory modify that agreement respectfully, and I argue it does not, and the appellate court says it does not. He had a duty of support. He made current support through his obligation at age 18, and duty of support was satisfied by continued stream of payments that continued through her high school years and, in fact, for several years thereafter.
Not technically support, that was a rich.
Well, it was a payment of a rich accumulation, that's right. But it was also cash flow, and it is in the nature of support. It was payment of accumulation from the past. And that is where sometimes you get a balance in equities.
So you're arguing that you can contract away rights that are given to you by the law if both parties agree?
Sometimes you can, but I'm not arguing that in this particular case. What I'm saying is the parties intended for her to reach her age majority and for his current obligation of support to stop when she reached her age majority in 1989 when they negotiated free entry, is what I'm saying. And that at that time, they contemplated that she would still have substantial cash flow, which came on the rear edges, that he was going to forego any right to challenge. And it's a combination of those two, the attorney's presence and the attorney's presence.
So you're arguing that you can contract away anything if both parties agree?
Well, it wasn't the understanding that they were contracting away anything because all he had was a duty of support, which he was satisfying, and he thought he was satisfying, the mother thought was being satisfied, and the attorneys for both he and the child support person, they thought that the continuing cash flow from the payment towards the jury, they was not going to challenge.
So you don't want to agree with my statement then, do you?
I do not, Your Honor. I don't want to agree with it because that wasn't the intent of the parties to be contracting away any legal obligation. They thought that they were agreeing to an agreement that was in conformance with the legal obligation.
Well, let's say now, let's get out of this case and let's say generally, can you contract away things that are rightly given to you by statute?
In some cases, you can, and it's just taken from the statute. Can I contract my right to, away my right to speedy trial? In some cases, absolutely.
Can I contract away support payments that the law says I owe until 18?
The court's consistently said you can.
Pardon?
I think the court's consistently said you can.
You can't?
You can't unless
cannot.
You enter into a deviation agreement in which you are, in effect, contributing support some other way, but the support is still there. So you, I think it's against public policy, in fact, saying I have no obligation to pay support. I don't think that would survive challenge.
Okay.
Did that separation agreement say that the duty of support of the party's minor child, or did it just say minor child?
I can look at it. I don't know the exact words according to my notes were that in fact said that she had obligation to pay support for the minor child, and we interpreted minor child to the same thing as if it's a minor child, she reached age of majority, she's no longer a child.
I understand all that. I just want to know if the separation agreement contemplated that it was their child.
Well, the separation clearly sets forth a public record that this is his child, but it's not born yet, and will not born after marriage is terminated.
Because your argument in your brief is he just did this to make sure there was no embarrassment.
Absolutely.
And the way you word it is support of the minor child, which doesn't say the party's minor child, and that's different.
I'm not certain how looking, Your Honor, but I suspect that in draft separation it probably says the party's minor child.
Okay. Then it's a contract he's bound by.
Counselor, under your theory, somebody would get fall in line of payments before the 18th birthday and then make up the payment at the 18th birthday and say, I'm supported by obligation to support.
I understand what you're saying, Your Honor, that isn't the intent of parties, and it isn't the theory that we're arguing. We're saying this case is so fact-specific that it's not going to arise. It has nothing to do with your job or obligation. It has to do with contract law and how they contract as well as these terms of work versus the duty of other means of the duty of support.
That's exactly what you did. Is you said, all right, we're going to have what we should have paid before account for the short what we should have paid now.
Well, Your Honor, at the time, the law didn't say you had to make child support payments in the treasury.
So it didn't say you had to do the support. It didn't say you had to do half the debt, not the debt.
No, it did not, and we did not address any other issues in terms of duty to support other than that agreement. The appellant, Mr. Dickens, has argued several times about ambiguities or how this could be interpreted or should be interpreted, and the only ambiguity that existed here was created by the agency and how they drafted the argument, or how they drafted the language of the entry. The language entry is actually clear that the parties intended to stop age 18 from current support. So the question the court may be looking at and make a decision on is, do we want to allow what you suggested, that is it, you want to allow the parties to, in effect, say there's going to be cash flow, there's not going to be more litigation, we're going to have an equitable resolution in a particular case, which is over and done with. It's become an issue because the child was already 6 years past the majority. That is the timing, and Mr. Holscher was consistently told by the agency, and was consistent with the law, plus with telling that his obligation to parents support is not when the child reaches the age of majority, so long as he continued to pay off his child support obligation in arrears, which he did. He made a substantial amount of money. They filed a contempt action only because he had miscalculated. As soon as they put up what the current figures were, to the age of majority, that their entry said his current support obligation was, he paid it immediately. Almost six months later, they filed a second contempt action in 1998, because I presume they don't have the only reason to do so, is within the agency, they reviewed that and decided they needed to clarify this point. And that started the interpretation. The magistrate, in fact, interpreted the definition, because the definition is clear on its face, interpreted to try and conform it with the law that was changed, but it was changed after this agreement in 1989. And neither party went back to court during the minority. Now, I would concede that if, for example, he had wanted to establish a relationship with his child and she was saying, no, I know there's a visitation agreement, but I'm going to let you, and he filed a motion to start building some kind of parent-child relationship and put it in the court's jurisdiction. Or she had said, you know, I think he's making more money now, and I want more money, so I'm going to file a motion to increase my support. If anything that would put this in the court's jurisdiction during the child's minority would result in, I believe, bringing them under the umbrella of a change in the law that said, now you have to pay child support for graduating from high school. That would be a question about whether or not they had an agreement. It would come then, but no one ever came back to court at all. Everyone was satisfied with their agreement until it became a question of the lawyers deciding that we need clarification at this point, we're not sure.
Thank you, Mr. Stoughton. Ms. Mowry, you saved almost 2 minutes of your time.
Yes, Your Honor, I would like to point out that Mr. Stoughton repeatedly talks about the intent of the parties. One would have to assume that intent is on the record in the child support order, the re-entry that was put into place in 1989. That entry does not state that child support will terminate at the age of 18. Unfortunately, what it says is that he will pay $75 per week when the child reaches 18, and does not delineate that as current support and arrearages, or as just support, or as support and arrearages. At this point, the trial court interpreted the document. They applied.
Well, excuse me. Maybe make sure I understand what you're saying. I have the 1989 agreement before me. Is that what you're referring to? Not the original. Petitioner Holscher shall pay the sum of $25 per week on set arrearage for a total of $60 per week until child reaches age 18. Your point is that it didn't specify what it was for?
It says at the age of 18 he shall pay $75 per week. Does not delineate
what the $75 is for.
In order to determine that, the trial court applied the case law and the statute as amended, and correctly decided that Mr. Holscher's obligation did indeed continue until the child had graduated, that there had not been any entry that modified current support, so they continued the current support fee, $35 per week, until the child graduated. Anything that he paid in excess of the $35 per week would then be applied toward arrearages. And again, the arrearages would accrue until the child was out of high school because of the amendments in the 1992 case. While the appellate would have repeatedly stated that Holscher case is significantly different than other cases in this district, it is not.
Thank you, Ms. Mowry. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal will please adjourn court.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.